Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the 13th episode of AI Movie Night. I'm your host, Joe Simpson, and tonight I'm joined by two great guests to talk about the absolute classic that is The Warriors. Firstly, I'm lucky enough to be joined again by Rory Greenfield, host of the excellent AI Comic Pod. How are you doing, mate?
I'm good, man. Just for the record, I want to say happy birthday.
Oh, thanks very much. Much appreciated.
Gent for doing this on your birthday, because I know I've been nagging you.
Oh, mate, it's a pleasure to talk films on my birthday, particularly one like this that I love so much.
And, yeah.
You know, so thanks very much for joining me. I'm also lucky enough to be joined by Joey Connors, who podcasts for Anfield Index and knows a hell of a lot about a lot of things, but in particular, films and football. How are you doing, Joey?
I'm doing real good, and I will echo Rory, happy birthday, my friend.
Oh, thanks very much. Thanks for joining me. I know how much you love this film, like Rory, and I'm really eager to hear your thoughts. So thanks to you both for joining me. Obviously, there's so much to talk about in this film, and we all love it. So I'm going to get straight to it, and I'm going to start off with my usual question, firstly to Rory. Rory, can you remember when and where you first saw The Warriors and what you thought of it at the time?
So I watched this, I think, after playing the game, which I know we're going to cover at some stage, because I don't think I couldn't do this without covering the game. So I watched this probably when I was 18, thereabouts, so that's going back some. And I think I bought it on DVD and watched it at the time. And yeah, I was blown away by it, to be honest, because... You know, I've always been a big fan of film, probably, well, for a very long time, but in particular, kind of teen years onwards. And this film was kind of like nothing I've ever seen. And I was I've been threatening to write a piece about the crossover between games and film. And there's obviously a lot of those games that have been converted into films directly. But there's those films that obviously just influence so much that goes beyond it in cinema and in gaming, which are two of my kind of favorite things. So this just is so influential in modern cinema, and people don't really know that about it, which is why I was desperate to do this at some stage, because I'm amazed quite how many people haven't seen this film.
Yeah, same here. So what you're saying is we're not going to get the numbers, are we? Thanks for recommending it, Rory.
I'm
only joking, mate. I'm hoping if we even get one person new to watch this film, I will be happy with that. I agree with every word you said.
That's the point, isn't it? Yeah, that's the point, man. It's about just kind of, you know, because the things I do on the Comic Pod, it's obviously huge, well-known franchises and you know, massive cinema, but there's films like this that just go so much under the radar, and I probably wouldn't have I probably might have eventually stumbled across it, but you know, Twitter's a good place to kind of spread the word nowadays.
Yeah, totally. And I think you've hit on something there that definitely rings true for me and probably both of you as well, that there is something, I would say something really special in a film that takes you unawares that you haven't heard of. And it's
not,
obviously I know this is a cult film and it's really popular with some diehard fans. But as you say, a lot of people haven't seen it. And I like the idea of, I know what it was like when I stumbled across it. I think I was just channel hopping when as a teenager and I caught it midway through and it was so exciting, this film. And I thought, you know, I was a bit immature, to be honest. And I thought, well, there'll be a boring bit soon and it'll just be a normal film. But no, it just carried on in that same vein right the way through. And I was like, how haven't I heard of this? How haven't I seen this before? And I just, like yourself, I just really enjoyed it. What about yourself, Joey?
I first seen The Warriors in 1997 when I was a sophomore in high school. And, I never really heard of it either. I mean, it came out in 79, which was a couple years before I was born. But, me and my friends, just kind of like what Rory did, got it on DVD, watched it at their house, and I was kind of blown away by it. I haven't watched too many, unless it's a big, big movie, too many of the 70s films. I know that's 79, so it's borderline, but yeah, I just fell in love with it. I mean, it's just an action movie from start to the end. It's so much fun. Such a fun movie.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more with you both there. It, particularly that point about from start to end, I think that sums it up. It just doesn't let up, and it's just, you know, it's just such a cool film. Now, obviously, it wasn't a particularly big hit at the time, but clearly we're talking about it now, and it does have a really strong cult following, you know, over 35 years later. Why do you think it's had such an enduring impression and become such a cult, Joey?
I think when it first came out, you know, it's one of those movies that didn't have a large budget, didn't have a lot of famous actors in it. Mm-hmm. It's huge now. I mean, I think people, when you kind of look at it, this is something that could actually really happen. If you look at a quote unquote post-apocalyptic, in this case, America, but really the world. I mean, I think there's 21 gangs total in this. So it's just literally people fighting for survival. And if you remember, maybe you guys really don't know because you're not from America, but back in the 70s, that time in New York City where this is obviously shot and takes place, there was a lot of crime, a lot of poverty, and a lot of horrible infrastructure in New York City. So that played a big part in it. And people just, you can relate to this movie in many different ways.
No, I think you're right there. And I think actually the shoot itself, it's largely filmed on the actual streets of New York, as you say. And I think at times that was a little bit dangerous because obviously some of the gangs themselves didn't like this film coming on their turf and sort of, you know, doing their own interpretation of gang culture and stuff like that. So I think even the shoot was a bit dicey at times from what I've heard, but you touched on something really, that definitely resonates with me, why I think it's so enduring. I think, generally speaking, everyone, particularly from childhood, can relate to being chased at some stage in their life. You know, not necessarily by, you know, an assortment of weird and wonderful gangs like in this, but definitely being somewhere where you're in a bit of danger and you've had to leg it, as we would say in Liverpool, you've had to run off. But funnily enough, and as a kid, there is a sweet spot when that happens sometimes where, as well as being scared, you're actually excited.
That's adrenaline,
and,
man.
Yeah. And this film captures it. And the difference with real life is it's normally for like 30 seconds, but this is like movie length, you know, one long simple chase. You know, it's a simple story, but told so well and with so much action and excitement, as you say. So that's definitely one of the reasons for me. I think it's so enduring because everyone can relate to some degree. And obviously it just excites people. What about yourself, Rory?
For me, like I said, it's the simplicity of it all. I mean, it's got, I've talked a lot about films that, you know, a lot of people always say, oh, that film's 30 minutes too long. There's too much of this scene. There's too much of that. This film is trimmed literally perfectly. You know, it's edited and cut exactly how it should feel and how it should play out. And it's, you know, I don't know why I'm getting nostalgic. Well, obviously talking about this, but recently I've got a thing for 90 minute films because there's times in life where you can't sit down and watch Interstellar because it's almost 3 hours long, or you can't watch Inception without going to sleep because it's 2.5 hours long. And that's me probably getting old, but it's equally a sign that sometimes there's films you just want to watch and you can just pick them up and put them on. And if you're in a bad mood or if you want something that's just going to take you to a different kind of headspace, this is just one of the perfect films for that. I honestly, I love it from start to finish. I absolutely adore it. It's one of my favorite films. And it's kind of timeless. Obviously, you can tell it's shot in the 70s. It's obviously got certain characteristics, but it's great in the sense that it's a 70s going into 80s film because it was shot in 79, because it does feel like it's coming out of an era into another. It feels like it was a bit of a trendsetter in terms of its style, because I'm not a big, you know, follower of 70s cinema, to be honest, but you can feel the 80s in it, and it was probably ahead of its time in terms of the style and the soundtrack. And like you said, I mean, the gangs were in uproar about it from everything I've read. They wanted to be cast in the film. They wanted it to be more real, and it feels as real as it can feel when you actually watch it. It was all shot overnight. It was shot in, I don't know how many weeks, but it was all night shoots, 12 till 8 overnight every day. And obviously they were in quite dicey positions, shooting it, like you said, and it's real. It feels so much, you know, and like Joey said, and this is a big thing that I've not even thought about until you mentioned it, that post-apocalyptic is obviously very on trend. So everyone loves The Walking Dead and all the zombie genre stuff, but, you know, even games like The Division, which again, you know, like this kind of film with guns, and all the rest of it, that's very, very much what people, you know, it's a great kind of imagination film. You really do get into the parts of the characters. And I honestly adore this film.
Yeah, no, some great points there. And I think you lead us nicely on with your mentioning, you know, the characters. Obviously, I think the film starts in as you say, it's such a lean film and it starts so well. Like the first 5 minutes, you know exactly what's going on. You know exactly who each character is, the main characters are.
Yeah.
And you're right in there on that night. And obviously it's all shot over, well, it's not shot, but it's all, the film itself is set over 24 hours, largely at night. And you just dropped into that night, aren't you? And I think at first they were originally going to start it in the day and have, you know, show you a bit more about their characters. And they decided quite rightfully, I think, that spoils it because it doesn't have that same impact as it does with the night and obviously the wheel from Coney Island and stuff. And I think it's such a great introduction to that world and those characters. So I suppose the first thing I'd ask then is, it, who would you say your favourite warrior is, Rory, and why?
I mean, Swan's the lead, so he gets the kind of most airtime. And there are parts of his performance that I actually really like. The one I like for kind of comic value is Vermin. He's kind of he's the perfect kind of sidekick to it all. And I think he's played really well. Not a lot of them. I mean, the thing with a film like this is obviously they've all got prominent roles to play, and different techniques in terms of fighting and style and different influence on the film, but it's kind of about the collective. You know, when I kind of saw you asking this question, I find it quite hard to pick one out because some of them, you know, some of them don't talk a lot, in fairness. You know, it's not a massive script. And it's quite hard to pick out an individual performance because, like Joey said, none of them were particularly big actors, and bar one or two of them a little bit, none have gone on to have huge kind of careers in that sense. So, yeah, it's I don't have one particular favourite. Every time I watch it, I kind of admire a different thing about a different person, except Rembrandt, who just annoys the shit out of me. But other than that, it's all good.
He just cowers
in the bathroom. And there's nothing worse than him cowering when there have been that a wonderful fight scene. I know we'll talk about.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Definitely. And I know where you're coming from there, totally. he doesn't do a great deal, does he? What about yourself, Joey?
No, it's gotta be Swan. I think Rory touched on a big point there. It's really difficult because the other characters are just kind of, I mean, you hate to say like they're not pointless, but they're in the fight scenes. But I mean, Swan, and even in the beginning, he steps up and takes, you know, he takes, over the Warriors when Cleon gets killed. So that's a big thing. You know, he steps up. I think his character stands out easily. I mean, look at all the other ones. You have, like Rory said, Rembrandt, you got Snow, Fox, but they're all just, you know, they all play little tiny pieces in the part of the movie. So it's hard to, I mean, Vermin's kind of funny. He has some funny lines. I think this one of his, you know, the throw it my way, baby. That's kind of funny when they see the lid. Some of them crack me up, but as, you know, as far as that favorite character, it's either Swan or, and I know he has such a tiny part, but I mean, he really he kicks off the whole thing, which is Cyrus. I mean, Cyrus's, that speech, which I'm sure we'll get into later, is just, I mean, his character. And I think, and I don't know WWF that much or WWE, but I'm pretty sure Booker T stole that, from, can you dig it?
So iconic, isn't it? Obviously, as I say earlier on, I mentioned the first time I stumbled across it, so I was just in the middle of it, and I loved it, and I ended up buying it. And I can remember when I first saw that, you know, can you dig it? You know, that first time, because he just kept going on and on and on. I was like, oh my God, what's happening here? But it's so
the kind
iconic
of scene you would rewind and play again. It's the perfect line. And I know you mentioned the opening before, when that really kind of creepy music comes on and it's just the wheel lit up, you know, bright purple. And it's just from that minute, you're hooked. That's why it's that kind of film. You literally go, what the hell is this? Cause I've seen a lot of films and I really don't think I've seen a film quite like this. And when films try to replicate this, which they do, and some do quite well, they don't get near it though. Do you know what I mean? Not really. And they don't have that same impact from minute one where, you know, like you said, the plot is delivered in a minute or in 3 or 4 minutes. And I love like the fact that it's shot at night and the police raid and all the spotlights come on. It's just great because, you know, despite them being all these huge gangs, you know, it's supposed to be 100,000 people. You know, what, 2,000 police officers turn up and they all scatter. And it's just great from that minute onwards.
It is. Totally agree. And I suppose on the character's point here, who's my favourite warrior? I think for me, I agree. It's hard to look back past Swan because he's like the perfect. What I like about him, I think, is he's the perfect blend of like diplomacy, toughness, and aggression when needed. And I love that. I love the fact that he's got that balance to his nature. I think, like, for example, we may talk about it later, but where they meet that gang, the orphans, they've gone across their turf. And I love the way he's actually respectful at first. He knows they could take them if it was a fight, but he knows the pragmatic thing to do is to be respectful and we'll just get through this with no drama. But he only does that to a point until they're being too arsey with him. And then he's like, fuck these. We could just take these. We're just gonna go right through their turf. And I love that. It's like, diplomacy. And then once that's over, we'll go to war if we have to, and now we're going, sort of thing. So now he's my favourite character. But shout out to Ajax. He's not my favourite because he's basically a massive prick, really, isn't he? But but there's something so watchable about him. He even makes me laugh, like on the train where he's like punching the things that hang down, you know, where you hold on to. He's just one of them people, you know. He will get them into trouble. If there's a way of getting them into trouble, he will find it. And like he's, you know.
Yeah, everyone's got a mate like that in a group. Growing up, there's always that guy who just sinks his in it. And I love, you know, we'll talk about scenes and stuff, but I kind of love his demise in the end. It's just perfectly done. But he's important to the group at the same instance because the guy's tough, you know.
Yeah, he
is tough as hell.
Yeah, he does. He has such a sexual appetite for women. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, they're kind of. I think they did it quite well that he didn't end up in the party that went to the Lizzie's house because that might have been quite interesting.
Yeah, that would have been bad news.
Yeah, I wonder what's to watch that. I mean, I think thinking about it though, that's a very good point. That probably is why they got rid of him, isn't it? Because it'd be a totally different dynamic with him involved. So, yeah.
The one actor, I mean, he's gone on to have a relatively strong career as an actor. You know, it's James Remar. He's been in quite a lot of films over the years. But the one actor that was supposed to have a big part in this is Fox. Now, Fox kind of is quite, he's killed off pretty quickly in the train station. And that's because they had a guy cast and then he fell out with the director and he was apparently quite an established actor, whoever was cast. And I read it the other day and he fell out with the director. So they recast him, but this other guy couldn't act. So they basically just killed him off as soon as possible. it was going to be Vermin that they were going to chuck in front of the train, but they decided to change it. So.
Oh, I see. I didn't know that. I love things like that. Yeah. It's funny. Funny you should mention that, and you mentioned James Remar beforehand because he had a similar experience in Aliens.
Yeah,
he was originally Hicks in Aliens, wasn't he? And I think he was a bit troublesome on set and didn't get on with James Cameron, and he ended up being replaced by Michael Biehn. And it is interesting what you're saying. He went on to do well, but I think he would have had that Hicks role alongside this and obviously 48 Hours, I think he could have been much bigger than he ended up becoming, although he is as you say.
He's had a well-established career, but you did look at times like being on the bordering of something very good, because he's always had a really good screen presence, especially in this. He does, when Ajax is on the screen, he does tend to steal the limelight. It's pretty impressive, actually, so.
No, you're right. You've just got to watch him when he's on screen. He's got something about him, hasn't he?
Yeah, he seems to have followed Walter Hill around for many different movies. So,
yeah. And I think that's a big credit. I always think when someone as talented as Walter Hill brings you along on different films, I think that tells you how highly rated he is. And you know, he's clearly a very talented guy, as we say.
Yeah, we always say that about Nolan, don't we? That he just brings back the same actors that he expects. And, you know, if you're a guy that gets in the good books with Nolan, you pretty much guarantee, like Michael Caine, you're going to be in nearly all of his films, all of his films. It's that kind of thing. And when a director trusts you, it's the same with Scorsese and DiCaprio and Matt Damon, where he can, and those kind of guys. It's great when that happens because the chemistry, it just works. So you could tell it's a big role in this film. And I think you'd be underplaying it if you didn't think Ajax was kind of at least up there with Swan as the most pivotal.
Yeah. No, totally agree. I'm going to now look at some of the, you know, the many weird and wonderful gangs in this film. And I've got a feeling there'll be some overlap with this question, but what would be your favourite gang and why? Starting with you, please, Joey.
It's got to be the Baseball Fury. Totally. It's just how they dressed up. And the funny thing is you know, you love how they use the bats, at least I do. but they weren't really tough. I mean, they got kind of handled easy, but
oh yeah,
they really did. And I thought the punks who could fight, I just they're not scared of me. If you come up on roller skates, I'm not afraid of you. You know what I mean? True. Like I'm just
yeah.
overalls, and they just so some of the outfits were awesome, but the yeah. baseball furies were easily the best for me.
Yeah, no, can't disagree. I was reading something that said that Walter Hill was a massive fan of both baseball and Kiss, and he combined yeah. the two to make the Furies. And, you know, how iconic are those baseball Furies? And as you say, you know, they weren't particularly hard, but when you first see them and oh, they yeah. don't stop, they were very scary. And obviously the contrast between their colours and the nighttime just looked amazing. It really did. What about yourself, Rory?
I just got to say on that point, the cardio those guys. That running speed is just insane. Wow.
Yeah.
But the big thing about the Baseball Furies, that song that backs them up is just so creepily wonderful. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
It just makes it. I knew the Baseball Furies was going to come up quite, obviously, because they probably are by rights. I obviously like the Gramercy riffs. I think they're great, but I've got a soft spot, and they're not in it for more than a minute, but I like the Turnbull ACs quite a lot.
Awesome in the beginning. Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah, because they've got a great truck, which I think they actually borrowed from a gang, which is awesome. and they look like a really traditional biker gang. Do you know what I mean? One you really yeah. wouldn't want to mess with. And I've got a good story about them that I love reading about these films. They went into a cafe after a shoot one day, and everyone thought they were a real gang. So the whole cafe fled in fear of this gang. Because they all went in with all their, you know,
you would do, wouldn't you?
Outfit. Yeah, you would do. Because, at the time, you know, they genuinely looked the part. And, yeah, I think they're a really good gang. I think the thing is, there's about 99 gangs in all in the script.
Oof, wow.
And if you play the game, there's a lot in that as well. And there's a lot that are in the game that don't cross over. And there's some wonderful outfits. There really are some wonderful outfits. There's a few in the movie that the orphans and the Lizzies and stuff, but that I'm not that fond of. But, yeah, I think the gangs that appear are really good.
Yeah, no, totally agree. And, you know, I think you've hit on something as well, a contrast there. The Baseball Furies, like Joey said, they looked amazing, but they weren't actually that tough in the end. But I think, I've lost my track there. The other gang, what were their name again? Sorry, Rory.
Turnbulls.
Turnbull ACs. Yeah, they were actually, they seemed really scary. You know, you did think, especially so many of them, and with that truck and thing, you did think if the Warriors got caught by then it's really game over sort of thing. And, you know, so no, that's a great contrast between the two there. Obviously, there's so many excellent scenes in this film. It's all good in different ways. Is there any particular favourites you have, Rory, that you'd want to discuss at all?
Pretty much all of them, but if I'm going to narrow it down slightly, I do love the scene when they get into the park with the Baseball Furies. I think the fight scene's great there, especially when, you know, Swan steals the bat and they're basically going kind of toe-to-toe with the bats. It's just really good. And then, obviously, you know, their walk through the park when they Ajax gets busted by the police officer, and the guy just never quits. Do you know what I mean? He's got handcuffed to a bench and he's dragging the bench along.
Yeah.
And then he still ends up knocking out one of the police officers. That's great. My favourite scene by far is the one that it took 6 days to shoot this. Mm-hmm. Is the scene in the bathroom in the fight scene in Union Square Station. I just think it's one of the best, you know, most real choreographed fight scenes in probably any movie. You know, I know you get wonderful martial arts films, and you get, you know, your Mad Maxes these days and all these incredible action films. But, you know, that is a brilliant fight scene in a really small space. And obviously that's why it took so long to shoot, to get it perfect. And it is perfect. There's nothing, you know, not perfect about that scene, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more with that choice. It's fantastic. I think it's one of the few scenes, if not the only one, shot on a set as well. And it's just, I think that contrast you made, I do like a lot of the martial arts films, where a lot of them have a sort of, you know, a grace and a balletic style. And
yeah,
whereas this is so much more, you know, I don't know, the gritty.
This is more Jason Bourne, isn't it?
You know? Yeah. It's more, you know, it's
used in your environment. It's not perfect.
Yeah.
That's what's great about it. And that's what's great about the whole film. It's completely not perfect, but then it makes it, you know, I don't know. It's that scene alone. I could just watch that on repeat. And a lot of directors and movie watchers and everyone else, if they watch that scene, will just go, Christ, that's what I want to aspire to, in my opinion. It's just a brilliant scene.
And it's great the way, obviously, the tension's building to it really well. You know, you can see this one of the punks following them on his skates, and, you know, they know it's going to come off soon, you know, and obviously some of the cavalry arrive and the numbers swell a little bit, but they're still outnumbered, and you know, it's building to this fight. And obviously in some films, the fight is then a letdown because the build up's been so good and the fight can't live up to it. But that fight, as you say, it puts the icing on that cake, and it's just, you know, it's just a brilliant scene, as you say. What about yourself, Joey? Any particular ones stand out for you?
Warriors come out to play. Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think it's hard to watch that Warriors without thinking of that scene.
So
Luther just
all that scene. It's brilliant.
Oh, it's perfect. Him, Luther just clinging the beer bottles together on his hand. That's one of my favorites. And I'll tell you what, there's two other ones. There's the opening, the D train. New York City, that's so iconic. I mean, that runs from the Bronx to Coney Island. You're talking, that's the whole gang right there. That's everything.
Yeah.
I thought opening that with that was so brilliant. I mean, I live in Pennsylvania, so I'm very close there, but you don't even have to know the D train. Most people in America, okay, New York City, D train. Yeah, I've been on that subway before. I thought that was awesome. And the last one was, Cyrus's speech. And I don't know if you guys know, you probably do because you're huge fans of it, but, you know, the Warriors is based off a real event. Battle of Noxa. So, I mean, that's awesome. Like, I'm a huge history buff. That's my background. That's my degree. So that's one of the other things that really got me into it. But yeah, that speech, I mean, he's talking in front of all those gangs. That's just, it's perfect in my opinion.
And that's great that you brought up the history of it as well. It adds to it, doesn't it? When you hear, you know, it's based on a real historical event, loosely anyway, you know, I think it was an army of Greek mercenaries, wasn't it? Behind enemy lines in Persia and having to run and fight their way home. And I love the fact that he's used that and brought it to, you know, this sort of modern setting and pulled it off brilliantly in a way that's just so exciting. The other thing I'd like to ask you about, particularly with that American perspective, I think Rory would almost certainly agree with me from No One Am I, imagine, from being British and watching these films, a lot of these films have an extra, I would think, have maybe an extra sort of excitement to us because they're set in America or in particular in somewhere like New York. Do you have that yourself, or is there a different thing because New York's more of a easily accessible place? I know America's so big, but does it have that same buzz like that to me as a teenager in particular, that sort of, as you say, that Coney Island to the Bronx train, even just the idea of being on that was exciting to me, never mind going to this big meeting of gangs and this ultimate journey.
Oh yeah, absolutely. New York City is a special place. If anybody has ever been there, you would know that. I mean, it's got the perfect mix of culture. I mean, it's a great place. And yeah, that it's still special for me. I have family that live there. Many friends that live there. I have a house in Brooklyn. So my daughter's name is Brooklyn. So
wow. Oh, brilliant. I didn't know you had a house in Brooklyn. That's even better.
I'm coming to stay next year, mate.
Oh, Me yeah, too, mate. Me too. We'll be on that train, Rory, next year with Joey. Don't you worry.
Mate.
New York City is just an amazing place. It really is.
And I think the other thing, and you know much better than me, is to me, as well as all that excitement, and I suppose a little bit of the excitement is part of this, it naturally has a little bit of an air of danger as well, of all that, particularly with all those, you know, all those different parts of New York. You know, it's one of them cities, or that's the impression I get, is it's a naturally tough city, particularly in certain areas. And that just adds to the excitement of this journey. It's like, they're not just, you know, they're not traveling through, I can't think of a place which is really, you know, they're not traveling through Switzerland. They're traveling through New York in the 70s. And that is just so exciting. Anyway, yeah. Never mind in this circumstance. So it's interesting.
They travel. New York is really, really, some parts of it are nasty. And I think it goes back to that, the whole night, the whole movies during the night. It's, there's just a lot of places you don't want to be caught during night in New York City. And as fun and beautiful as Central Park is, which plays a part in this movie, you don't want to be caught in some parts of Central Park. You certainly don't want to be caught in the Bronx. There's really nasty parts of Brooklyn, of Queens, even Manhattan. So, I mean, it's such a large area, but yeah, there are some very dangerous. And, you know, keep in mind, there is a lot of gang activity in New York City. Let's face it.
No, I think that's really interesting to hear that perspective. And I think that's probably a good place to have a short break. So thanks everyone for listening. We'll be back in a few short moments.
You're listening to the Anfield Index podcast channel.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
I'm just going to look at now, obviously, there's so many memorable lines in the Warriors, and we've touched on a couple already. Are there any of those you've previously mentioned or any others that you particularly, you know, would like to discuss these memorable lines? So I'll start with you, please, Joey.
There's a few. One of the ones when at the end when Swan asks Luther, he says, hey, why did you do that to Cyrus? Why did you kill him? And Luther's answer is just, it shows you the craziness of him. He just says, no reason. I just like doing things like that. if that doesn't show the madness in somebody, yeah. I'm not sure what does. And there's a few, there's two more. And when he also at the end, before they meet up at the end, he says, or Swan says, when we see the ocean, we figure we're home. Safe. Something about that line I just love. I absolutely love that line.
Yeah.
Always have. And the last one is, I think, probably my favorite, when Ajax says to the baseball fury, I'll shove that bat up your ass and turn you into a popsicle stick.
where else do you get lines like that? Do you know what I mean? It just doesn't happen, does it? And it is. And even though we've said about him, you know, the guy is basically a knob. But you love it when he says that, because he's like, he's their knob. he's fighting for the Warriors, and you're glad that in the fighting terms, you're glad they've got them on their side, because for all his faults, he is a good Warrior in fighting terms. And yeah, no, that's such a cool line. And I love those other two lines you mentioned. I mean, I think that was the one I was going to say, no reason. That was the line for me, because I think it's so real. You know, we've all met the odd really nasty person in our lives, and some of them don't appear to have any reason. They're just like causing trouble, basically. You know, some people want to watch the world burn and things like that. You know, that's so summed up that character. He was never going to have, even if he said one, he was never going to have a big, deep reason for doing it. He was just trouble. He was just a horrible, you know, runt, basically. He was just and I think that summed him up so well. And that other line you mentioned about when we see the ocean, we figure we're home. I just love that, like yourself. I think it's because we can all relate to having a certain, you know, as someone from Liverpool, and we'll all have our own versions of this. Not particularly in terms of safeness, but I used to live in London myself, and I always remember coming home on the train and pulling into Lime Street. And there was just something about that feeling that just made me feel happy. And we can all relate to that. So no, great lines you've mentioned there, Joey. What about yourself, Rory?
I haven't got any left.
I know it is hard, but even if there's any of those or any of the ones we've mentioned earlier that you like, that maybe you want to mention at all in a bit more depth.
Ajax has got a lot of good lines. He's got a filthy mouth on him, but the one thing I'd like to address, and we'll obviously talk about the soundtrack, is all the lines by the DJ. I just absolutely adore the style that shot. The music and the way those lines are delivered, because it's like having a narrator, but so cleverly. Do you know what I mean? Because it's obviously telling all the gangs what's going on subtly. They never mention it's gangs or fight, or do you know what I mean? It's just so clever. And the way she smoothly delivers all those lines is just awesome. I think the one about, you know, yeah, see the ocean and we feel we're safe, we're at home, you know, I just think, yeah, that resonates with me as well, because, you know, these guys have bopped or battled all the way back home and then it's still not over. Do you know what I mean? They fought so hard to get there, and it's, you know, the scene, obviously we'll talk about the clothes, I'm sure, but you know, the ocean is where they feel comfortable. And at that stage, you know, Joey might be able to inform me, even more, but, Coney Island was not a particularly pretty or nice, part of New York, and they fought all the way back. And do they say, you know, we fought all the way home to get to this shithole or whatever? Do you know what I mean? But it's their home, you know, it's where they're from, and it's their territory, and that's why it means so much to them. So, it's that part.
And you're right, Rory. Coney Island is not the nicest place. So not somewhere you want to live.
Yeah, no, that's a good way of looking at it as well. It's like, yeah, as you say, it may not be the best place, but it's their place.
Yeah.
And I think you touched on as well, there was a feeling, and boy, were they right to feel that way, of, you know, we've earned this now, you know, we shouldn't still be in jeopardy. We look what we've done.
Yeah.
And we've still got to have this final battle. And yeah, no, I also think as well, and for all it's this slick, very lean action film, there's some bits, and I know we'll touch on some others, some bits of tenderness in it. I think that's quite tender for an action film.
Yeah.
For someone to speak like that, you know what I mean? I'm not trying to make it more than it is, but that's quite a tender line. It's like, it's not the line of someone who's trying to look hard or be tough all the while. It's just, you know, that's how he feels, you know, about his home and where he's finally got to. Obviously, you've touched on the music there, Rory. Is there any particular bits of the music that stand out for you? I know you've mentioned the sort of the host who's playing the music. Is there any bits that stand out for you?
So the original pieces that were done for it, so like the theme and then the things with the Baseball Furies and stuff, they're all original and they're all really good. I think in terms of the songs in it, the main one for me, there's a couple of really good songs when they're at the Lizzie's, in fairness, but Nowhere to Run is just wonderful soul song, Motown song. It's just such a great song. And the words are obviously so poignant with the film. There's rarely a song that fits a film better than that does. And it was a great, I know a little bit about 70s music and 80s music and stuff. And that era, they just encapsulated it so perfectly because they're a group that looked like they'd like, punk and rock and of that era. But to put a kind of soul Motown soundtrack to an extent on it is just a perfect twist. It just fits really well with the era, and I think it's a really great soundtrack.
Yeah, no, couldn't agree more, and totally with that choice, as you say. There can be few songs that fit a film, as you say, as perfectly as that one does.
Yeah.
What about yourself, Joey?
That was definitely one of the ones I picked, and I think what Rory said was spot on. It's definitely perfect for that film. And the other song, which I happen to really like, and you guys will probably both know, In the City at the End is absolute perfect song for this. And Joe Walsh is great. I love the Eagles as well. So, I mean, Joe, you might like them. Rory, I'm not sure if you know. You probably do know who the Eagles are.
Oh, of course I know who the Eagles are. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That song right at the end, just the timing of it is just, it just puts a huge smile on my face.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah,
I love
it. And the lyrics are, again, so apt for this film, aren't they? I think some of the lyrics are, I know there must be something better, but there's nowhere else in sight.
Mm-hmm.
It's survival in the city. And obviously when I say it sounds really, really crap. It suddenly dawned on me because I almost chanced singing it and I thought, no, that'll everyone will turn off at that point. But it doesn't sound that good when you say them. But when you hear them at the end of that film, and obviously, as you say, Joe Walsh, it's quite powerful at the end of an action film. Do you know what I mean? It really does have an effect. And I think it's because the characters as well, you've gone on this journey with them as well. And you're just so happy that they're back. And obviously, their life might not be, as the song's lyrics suggest, their life's probably not going to be great even now that they're back, but at least they're home safe. And no, two great song choices by you both there. I suppose that links nicely to, arguably the key relationship in the film between, Swan and Mercy. Now, some people don't really like this relationship, whereas others love it. What were your thoughts on it, Joey?
I am on the half of I didn't like the relationship. And I'll say this with, I thought Mercy, the character, would be good, if this sounds a little crazy, but in another movie. But I didn't think there was a need to have that. I mean, when Swan met her, she was, I believe she's a prostitute. And she was, hanging out with the orphans. And I mean, to me, it didn't sully the film in any way. I just didn't think there was a real need for it, because if you're not going to have, which I know we're probably getting to later, but if you're not going to have a sequel, what's the point? I didn't really understand that. And I didn't feel that they needed to have a love interest for Swan. I didn't feel like that was necessary.
No, I see where you're coming from. And I think, obviously, a lot of people agree with you. It's interesting. From what I can tell anyway on the net, there's clearly this big split. What about yourself, Rory? What were your thoughts on that relationship?
I think so. In essence, I kind of agree on they don't like camp, but I kind of like that she stirs trouble, because not that they're not in enough trouble already, but she is an antagonist and she does bring up out a different side in Swan, which I do think is important for the journey he's going through. Do you know what I mean? In the film. So it does benefit him in that regard. I think their solo scenes together do grate a little bit, especially in the underground, because she is by definition an annoying character. So, and I think she's written that way, and I think she acts it that way pretty well, to be fair. But the scene when they're finally on the train home and they're sat across from like the prom party kind of couple, or two couples. A lot of people wouldn't like that scene necessarily, but I just kind of, I think it does show probably a bit of a truth about what the divide was in New York at that time, and the kind of divide in the cultures. And I kind of think that has some benefit to the film, but yeah, I'm not entirely sold that she needs to be there, but you know that, you know, you've got to have certain other aspects to it. And I think films in the 70s without some form of a love interest is just probably non-heard of. Do you know what I mean? It, even if it's scripted in this way and in a completely different fashion, and they don't, well, they don't have a conventional happy ending. But I think a film in that type of genre and an era would probably still need it no matter what.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. I think I'm probably somewhere in the middle of the two camps, I suppose. I think I definitely share some of your feelings about the sub part of the subway, you know, the underground scene, in the dark. I think some of that, and she does great at times, but I think you both touched on it. She does bring bits out of Swan, and you get a bit more of his character beyond the warrior. And obviously a bit more of what her and their lives are like beyond being in a gang, and how bleak it is in some ways, and why they would want to be in a gang, because obviously the things it gives them, the excitements, and you know, when clearly they don't feel they've got a lot of potential in that world. So there are aspects of life, but no, I'm probably somewhere in the middle there.
You nailed it then, there, mate. Actually, I think that's the thing. It does, for a film that is all about the gang and all about the fight and all about getting home, it does show a slightly different picture of life outside of the gang, because obviously there kind of isn't one, but maybe Swan is thinking he wants one, but she can't see a way of making her life better. Do you know what I mean? Because yeah. she is what she is. So yeah, when you analyze it and you start to think about these things, there are other things that do, you know, open up for you. But again, she does great. So I can see why anyone would really get pissed off with her, because Jesus, she's damn annoying, even to the orphans.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean there. I know exactly what you mean there. And just obviously, we've talked about how, you know, how much of a cult it is, and you know, there's still festivals linked to it, and people buying merchandise and things like that, and obviously all that type of stuff. And one of the things that's prompted is every so often there's talk of a potential remake being made. Would this be something you'd welcome, Rory?
Absolutely not. In no way, shape or form. It hurts when they make remake films that don't warrant remaking. There are times, and I'm all for reboots and remakes and maybe refranchises, because, you know, it can be done successfully and it can be done with skills and techniques and with technology that wasn't there at the time. But this isn't a film about high-tech visuals, although it does look really good. It's really well shot. But it's not a film about, you know, high-end, you know, you don't need blue screens. Do you know what I mean? You don't need anything that would make sense to remake it. And you couldn't give it the edge back that it had before. I mean, I don't liken it exactly, but Drive is one of the modern films that sits in this kind of genre of film, and is clearly influenced from this film and from certain gaming elements. And I just think, you know, they tried to remake that with a different soundtrack, and it was some, you know, commercial thing with Radio 1 and stuff, and it just didn't work because it was perfectly made as it was, and you don't need to tamper with things. And I just think you look at the Warriors, and if they touched it, I'd fear for what they produce, and then it might start to ruin what was made before. So
very good points made there. I completely agree with all of them. What about yourself, Joey?
I'm in complete agreement with Rory. That to me, that's like, would you remake Goodfellas? Never. would somebody try to recreate the Mona Lisa? To me, that movie's perfection. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. I don't think you have to touch it. I think there's no need for a sequel. There's no need for a remake. And I'm pretty sure we all know if they were to do a remake, it would just be for the money they'd make off of it.
Yeah, Yeah, no, I think that's the key, isn't it? That's almost certainly the reason. It'd only be the cash in. I mean, or they use the other thing I don't like is sometimes when someone does a remake and uses the name and then tries to make a film that's totally different and sort of spoils some of the original or takes some of the shine off. Like, I think Tony Scott, who obviously is sadly deceased now and was, you know, great, great director. He was going to remake it, but he was going to set it in LA and he was going to make it more real. And I think that both of those things for me, that's not what The Warriors are about. It's not, of course, it can have some real elements, but it's not really meant to be.
It would have turned out like Miami Vice. It would have been like some, it would have, you know, that kind of, or some kind of, you know, Michael Bay film or something, which is probably Miami Vice, but some, it would have been horrible, I think. And he's a good director and he's, you know, sadly, passed, but you know, it would have been a sacrilege.
I agree. And I think as well, you know, although there's the occasional gun in this, obviously, I think in the era where guns are so freely available, it'd just be so much more bad taste. You know, a chase and fight is something I can watch, but I wouldn't want to see, you know, these young gangs, you know.
Guns freely available in America? Really?
We need another hour for that one, but I wouldn't want to watch that. I think this strikes the perfect balance between danger and fun. And I think if you add guns into the mix in mass amounts, it really takes some of the magic away, for me anyway. I'm now going to look at, you know, we've mentioned its considerable influence in so many different ways. And one of the ones that you mentioned earlier, Rory, so I'll start with you on this, is its influence on computer games. And, you know, have you played the likes of Streets of Rage or Double Dragon? And
have
you played
I
the Warriors?
Played, have
I know, I almost don't need to ask it. I know the answer, really.
Streets of Rage 2 is the best game ever made, full stop. And Streets of Rage 2 is the most directly influenced game from this film. Obviously, Double Dragon and those kind of side-scrolling beat-em-ups and stuff, but the soundtrack, which is a little bit more Japanese and techno, but there's clearly influences there and the style, and Streets of Rage 2 is excellent. And then, you know, what's better than having pretty much the best, games producer, you know, Rockstar making the Warriors, because it's so iconic to them. And they did it such a good service. The game, it's one of the best games, of that kind of genre, that kind of era. I love the Warriors game, and it's hard. You can't get hold of it anymore. It's not on kind of next gen console, but, if anyone can find a way of playing it or a way of means, it's just such a great game. And it is a film that does influence modern cinema hugely, but obviously gaming, like you said, and modern gaming, and it's always cited as one of those films that influences so many people that I respect. And I just think they've got good taste.
Yeah, no, couldn't agree more. Obviously, clearly Rory, like myself, has played so many of those games and loves them. Joey, are you the same? Are you a fan of any of these games that were influenced by it?
Yeah, massive fan of Double Dragon. I remember playing Double Dragon until my hands bled. So I remember, you know, remember the Lee brothers, Billy Lee and Jimmy Lee? I think Billy Lee was player one. I mean, I can remember that game like it was.
But even with the graphics, which now would look awful, it was just brilliant. And so many of these things were like new, you know, that you could damage, or at least new to me, you could damage parts of the scenery and pick up weapons. You know, it sounds really quaint now saying this, but at the time they were real big things, and they were like, you know, so exciting to be able to do. And, you know,
you get the pipe or the knife too, and you chuck in the knife. It's great. It was so directly influenced, and a lot of people won't know that. And it's such a good film. I hope anyone listening to this does go and watch this film if they haven't already.
No, I hope they do. And I don't know whether you both agree. And this is probably to some people will seem a criticism, and from me it's not. The film is like a computer game, but in a good way. In terms
of, yeah.
You know, it's this simple plot, and you've got this, you know, 24 hours or whatever, and it's just such, so much fun right the way through, you know. And I think you touched on it earlier on, Rory. It's, you know, there are times where you don't want to watch a film where you've got to, and I don't mean this as a criticism, but where you've got to think a lot, you know. There's things you can think about in this film, but it's mostly just fun and excitement. And some films, like Michael Bay films, aim for that. It's not that easy to get. It's a very hard thing to do. Yeah.
The one film that's achieved it, which I know we're going to do eventually, because I'm going to nag you until we do, is Mad Max Fury Road last year. And again, it's basically the most fun I've had in the cinema for a decade. It's very rare that films get that right, that keep you on the edge of your seat, but keep you relaxed at the same time. And it's a genius film. It is a genius film.
Yeah. And the movie's really good. It just kind of drops you off. It drops the characters off. Like you're saying, it's like a point of view video game.
Yeah.
Every POV video game you get is pretty much from this.
Mm-hmm. No, great point. We're running out of time, and we could talk for so much because we've all got so much to say because we love it so much. Do you have any final thoughts? Anything we haven't touched on at all, Joey? Anything you know we may have missed or?
Not a ton. I just really hope that people really do get their hands on this movie and watch it, because I think it's a masterpiece. And for its time, I think Rory mentioned this earlier in the pod, that it really is ahead of its time. It's just such a good movie. And if you like action movies, it's not your typical, you know, like Schwarzenegger action movie, but it's just awesome. Like we were talking about, you could picture yourself being in that fight, and you can feel all the emotion that they feel just trying to get back home. That's all they're trying to do, is just get back home. And, you know, they happen to clear their name at the end, which is obviously great, but you just feel like a family just trying to get back home, and everybody can relate to that.
Yeah, no, totally agree. And yourself, Rory?
I think that's it. It's just a relatable film. And for someone who isn't from the States and, you know, grew up in a pretty rural location, I've lived in cities for a lot of time now, my kind of adult life and stuff. But, you know, for me, it was that escapism when I was young, and it was like you were saying, dreams of something that's quite unknown to you. And I've been to New York, and I love the city. And, it's just an iconic film. And I watch it and think, this can't have been made that long ago. Do you know what I mean? Watch it and go, it can't be 35 years old. It doesn't feel that old. Nothing about it. The production and all the processes that went into it. If you watch other films around the 80s, you know, it's an 80s film. You know, it's that era, but this still feels fresh. And that's quite incredible that many years on.
Yeah. No, great points made by you both there. And, I've really enjoyed talking to you about this film we love so much. I think that's a really good place to end. I'd just like to thank you both for coming on, and thank everyone who's listened. They always appreciate every listen and every bit of feedback. So thanks very much for that. Where can people find more of your work and your thoughts, please, Rory?
Oh, people find me too much, man. I did a post-match pod last night for the Everton game, which was an absolute delight to do, as you can imagine. I've got Europa League pod to come. We've got a great AI comic pod next week for a Civil War preview. We're going to get Joey on soon. We've just got to find the right platform. And I know you're going to come back on and do our Batman versus Superman review, which would be great. So yeah, I'm all over, man. Bit of writing as well, so I'm loving AI.
Oh, great. Well, I look forward to hearing all of those. They sound so, I've already listened to the post match, loved it. Captured the mood, you know, and what a result, obviously. And what about yourself, Joey? Where can people find more of your thoughts?
My Twitter handle is Joey C Liverpool. I kind of tweet about a lot of different stuff, sometimes inappropriate, sometimes people don't give a shit what I'm saying, because I have to remind myself a lot of times that I think 99% of the people I talk to are not American, so don't know what I'm doing. So, and I do have to say that, Rory, you are one of my favorite writers on AI.
Oh, thanks, man.
Brilliant. Couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more. And, you know, as well as that, Rory, you know, is interesting to listen to. His writing's great as well. You know, and credit to you as well, Joey. I mean, Rory told me, you know, obviously I follow you as well, but he said that it'd be so great to have your perspective on, as well as your film knowledge, that whole American perspective. And you mentioned them with your Twitter. I think Rory's probably the same as me. I think it's good to have that sort of, when I follow someone from somewhere else, I like to get a taste of their life and their world outside of the Liverpool FC bubble. And, you know, so no, keep up the, you're a great follower, and I'd recommend anybody to follow you both. And, once again, thanks to you both for coming on. Thanks to anyone for listening. If anybody has any feedback, good or bad, or film suggestions, please let me know on Twitter. It's Joe Simpson at JoeSimpson79. Thanks for listening.
Warriors, come out to play. Warriors, come out to play. Warriors, come out to play. Warriors, come out to play.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.